I'm putting this on the pod. So currently Sarah is showing me the audience retention on YouTube.
It's 8.2% of the video. People listen to our intro and they're like, fuck this. No.
No, it's yeah. Oof.
It's okay. At least dad listens on YouTube.
Yeah. Hi, dad.
Hi, dad.
How many people like start out? Average view duration, 4 minutes. Okay. Is it like this?
I don't know how to read YouTube stats.
It's fine. You know, because we don't do it for you. We do it for us.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh my god.
Ready? Hello.
Hello.
Deadpan.
Hello, everybody. And welcome to Ghoul Society.
That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Yeah. Okay. What a good introduction.
Thank you.
We're back.
This is Mr. Wiggles.
Hi, Mr. Wiggles.
He's ready to listen to your story.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
It's not a very nice story.
Oh.
Maybe he shouldn't listen.
Okay.
Hi. Great. Well, we just recorded, so I don't know what to talk about.
It's okay. We have to pretend that it's a new day.
Sorry.
It's a new dawn. Day. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. And yeah. I'm feeling okay. Good. I'm excited to just sit back now. That was so much talking.
Yeah, that was. I have made so many friendship bracelets.
Okay, yes. I heard
Taylor
about this.
Swift. Send you pictures.
Did you see that thing I sent you on Instagram? It was this creator I follow at With Wendy. She's mm-hmm. really cool. And she like made this jacket for the Eras Tour. And there's this like part on the back where they added
yes.
fringe.
Yeah.
And they added
and it was
all the bracelets.
Yeah, I saw yeah. that. That was cool.
It was super cool. So yeah, I heard like on that episode with Montana, you were talking about how you got the beads, but the beads were too small. I don't understand.
I just thought they were going to be regular beads and they're literally tiny.
Oh,
they're
I
not
see.
Like.
They're not the square, the regular size letter squares.
No.
Cubes.
Like the colored beads are oh. small. They're
oh.
not like. I don't know. Just regular beads.
Just a regular like, ass fucking bead
size. They're really tiny. So no. it's so just taking me a bit longer. But that's okay because I've almost used all the beads. But on Friday, I actually bought another little bag of lettered beads.
Did you go to Bead World?
No, I went to Michael's because I was getting a massage at work anyway.
Oh, I see.
So I went to Michael's and I got a bag of lettered beads and I needed some more string. So I got that.
Nice.
And I ran out of tees after 4 fucking bracelets. I'm not even
oh,
kidding.
No.
And I'm like, okay, there were barely any tees in the bag.
Oh.
And that's what I really needed.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
And so yesterday I spent 3 hours making bracelets.
I love your life.
I think overall, I probably spent over 9 hours making these bracelets.
That's
and
amazing.
And I only have like 20.
That's a lot. Beading
yeah.
is so fun.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's actually so fun.
Yeah.
I remember this time during the pandemic when I had this little like birthday celebration outside in the courtyard. Were you there? I don't know if you were there or not. It was in Bastion Square courtyard. Sorry,
oh.
not Bastion Square, Market Square.
Oh.
And I just realized, did I accidentally say Bastion Square in my story instead of Market Square for Agnes's Bakery?
I think you did.
Okay, so this is actually perfect because this one will come out afterward, and I would just like to corrections corner a little bit here. I said...
I think... Did you?
I don't know. I might have said Bastion Square, where Agnes Bing's bakery was. But
wrong.
Wrong. It's in Market Square, which is close, but not that close.
Yes.
So I'm really sorry. Anyways, that's all the corrections,
I
think.
You had a birthday there. Yes. Oh, I think I was there.
And we made the mask strings.
Yes, I still have mine.
We beaded them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, wouldn't it be fun to get some beads for our holiday time in Shemanis?
But what am I doing with these beads?
We're making bracelets.
But I've already...
Girl, I'm making necklaces.
Bracelet making out.
Okay.
I'm going to have so many leftover ones. I'll give you some.
Make a glasses thing. It's okay. Fine. Yeah. You don't want to do crafts with me? It's
no,
okay.
I do. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So, yeah. Friendship bracelet.
That's great. Oh, also, okay. I didn't know that you had a freaking ghost experience at work.
Yeah.
What the hell?
It just happened like a week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but you didn't even text me or anything.
Sorry. Mm. I was at work. I'm working.
I know. That's so spooky.
I got there, put my coat away, looking in the mirror. I was like
something pulled away. Something was looking at you and then pulled its head away.
Yeah, in our kitchen.
That's where you felt something before, too, in the kitchen, right? Or no?
Just in general, when I'm closing.
Yeah.
Ooh, or spooky. Opening.
You should just tell them that they can be there, but they need to stop scaring you.
Yeah.
Just say it out loud.
Yeah.
And then they will. I've done that before.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't feel as scary.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I saw. I don't know. It felt like a woman.
Mm.
That's really all I had, like childish, like a younger person.
Oh.
With like black hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a teen.
Or no? Like tween.
A tween?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you saw that spooky, wooky, ooky ghost.
Yeah, but I don't think it was spooky. I think I was just spooked because I was alone and I was like, oh, what was that?
And you weren't...
I went into the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I was just like, hello? A white person in a horror movie. Like, I did that, you know?
Oh, my God.
I was like, I just walked around the clinic. I was like, okay. I turned on all the lights.
Hmm.
And then I just sat down at my desk to do my work to start my day. But yeah, I don't ever, when I'm there alone, I don't feel alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because there's people who live upstairs.
Right.
Like in the condo.
Yeah. You feel it like in that space.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that'll be interesting to see like what unfolds over time.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear more about it.
Yeah, me too. But I'm excited. I don't know. Maybe I should reach out a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt to do so.
Yeah.
Because you can always just say, like goodbye, done.
Yeah.
You have to stay here, blah, blah, blah. Like, you usually have to respect those things somehow.
Yeah, also, you were very upset that I said I do a Ouija board in your house.
Yes.
Okay, what the episode fuck?
Yeah, when Sarah was like, Montana, or did Montana say it? Like
Montana said, okay, so
just
you wouldn't do it at Jamie's house. Our house, but you'd do it at Jamie's? I was like, yeah.
And I was like, what the hell?
It's a spirit board.
Oh my gosh. No, I wouldn't do a Ouija board in my house.
No.
But I do want to also do it. It's funny that you said doing it like at the cemetery, because that's where I would do it as well. Like somewhere outside.
Yes. And you can be like, you cannot follow us home.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then we just leave the Ouija board somewhere outside.
Oh my God. Dude, that would be front page news. Satan.
Satan
worshippers
Satan
in the cemetery.
Well, in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, except Victoria.
Victoria, BC.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you got for me today?
Okay.
When I was doing the Agnes Bing story, that I was worried that you were going to do it too.
No, I thought you were going to do my story for some reason.
Weird. We both had the same feeling.
I'm like nervous.
What?
Okay.
Okay.
I have I also did a little beginning plot.
Okay.
Story. Are you ready?
Yes. Is it local? Can I ask?
No, it's not local.
Okay, cool.
It's December 24th, 1945 in Fayetteville, West Virginia. And the Sauter family is asleep when the phone rings at 12:30 a.m.
Wait. I actually feel tears forming in my eyes. Okay. All right. We're in for it. Okay.
Jenny Sauter wakes up and goes downstairs to answer it, only to find a woman's voice on the other end asking for someone she didn't know. Jenny said the woman had the wrong number, so she hung up and returned to bed. On her way back upstairs, she noticed at this time the house wasn't shut down as it would be, so the lights were on and the curtains were still open. Something that her children would have done. But one of her daughters, Marion, was asleep on the couch. So maybe the other kids thought she would turn down the house after they went to bed.
Mm.
Assuming her other children were in bed in the attic, Jenny closed the curtains, turned off the lights, and went back to bed herself. About half an hour later, Jenny awoke to the sound of something hitting the roof and then a rolling noise.
Right.
Hearing nothing else.
It's not Santa.
It's not Santa. She went back to sleep. Around 1:30, she woke up again from the smell of smoke. She noticed a fire in her husband George's office. Jenny woke George up, who went to wake up some of their sons, who were to help wake up the other children. Jenny, George, and 4 out of their 10 children, Marion, 17, Sylvia, 2, John, 23, and George Jr., 16, escaped the house, frantically calling out to the rest of the children upstairs. At this point, the stairs were on fire, and they heard no response from the other kids, who were 14-year-old Maurice, 12-year-old Martha, 9-year-old Louise, or Louie, I think it might be Louie, 8-year-old Jenny, and 5-year-old Betty. One of their eldest sons, Joe, 23, wasn't home at this time, as he'd just been discharged from the army, serving in World War II.
Wow.
So...
I am actually shocked that you're doing this story. I'm surprised.
While I was writing this, I had full body chills the entire time for hours, and now I also have full body chills.
It's a heavy hitter. It's a really, really, really famous case.
Yeah. It's Montana just texted me and said it's the most anticipated episode that I've done so far for him.
Really?
Because I told him what I was doing. He was like, shut up. He's also very interested in it.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. Okay. This is really wild. I just had a thought that I hadn't had before.
Okay.
With the bang on the roof and the rolling. Yes. It sounds like it could have been like a... okay. I'm going to say this wrong and then I'm going to be laughed at. Oh, I remember. A Molotov cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it's assumed to maybe be? I mean, I know you'll get into it, but I never thought of that until right now.
No, not that.
Okay.
But like similar in the sense of like a explosive something to like cause harm.
Okay. Also kind of exciting that you're doing like a holiday episode.
Yeah.
I guess we just do holiday episodes from here on out.
It's a holiday good idea. Sleigh is on.
Oh, whoop de do. Dick Green Dog.
Okay. So now that we've set the scene, we'll delve into the Sauter family a bit more. George Sauter was born in Sardinia, Italy, in 1895 and immigrated to the U.S. 13 years later with his older brother. He found work on the railroads in Pennsylvania and after a while took a job as a truck driver in West Virginia. There he started his own trucking company, and it was there in Smithers, West Virginia, where George...
Smithers.
Well, no. Sorry, I have a spelling error that says Georgia, but it's George.
Georgia.
Okay, so in Smithers, West Virginia, George met Jenny, the daughter of a storekeeper who had also immigrated from Italy in her childhood. George and Jenny got married in 1922, and the Sauters settled down just outside of Fayetteville, where there was a large Italian community. In 1923, they welcomed the first of their 10 children, with the last of their children being born in 1942. As George's trucking business grew, the Sauters became one of the most respected middle-class families in the area. Although, George was known to voice his strong opinions, sometimes alienating people.
Right, 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 right.
Of note, George was overwhelmingly opposed to Italian dictator Benito Mussolini.
Right.
Which brought about many arguments with other members of the Italian community.
Oh, yes. And then that's the link to the mob. Okay.
By 1942, Joe Sauter, the second eldest son, left home to serve in World War II. In 1943, Mussolini was executed, but some in the community in Fayetteville still held grudges against George for speaking out against the Italian dictator.
Wow.
In October of 45, a life insurance salesman warned George that his house, quote, would go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was him. Like, what?
I know.
What?
On another occasion, someone who was seeking work from George noted that a pair of fuse boxes towards the back of the house would, quote, cause a fire someday, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
This concerned George as he had just had the entire house electrically rewired when they installed a new electric stove that they had bought.
Oh.
And the local electrical company deemed it safe.
Wow. Okay. I love when you buy a new appliance and then you have to rewire your entire fucking house.
Well, it wasn't electric before.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Yeah. Their stove wasn't electric before.
I was like, okay.
That's why they had to rewire the house.
Oh, smokes. So they essentially were wiring the house because it was never wired.
No, it was.
Oh, but it wasn't.
Were probably like, getting an electric stove. We have the money. Just rewire the whole house. Safety. Wow.
I'm actually
they have 9 kids who live at home, bro.
I don't understand how people go in and put new wires into houses after the walls are already finished. Doesn't make. I know you'd like drill a hole. I don't get it.
I don't understand. I don't know. It's also said that in the weeks before Christmas of 1945, the older Sauter sons notice a strange car parked along the main highway through town, watching the younger Sauter children return home from school.
Ew. Okay.
Yeah, right?
Don't watch people. So unless you're doing it for art.
Yeah. Okay.
But then still don't be a creep.
Yeah.
No creeps.
So we're back to the beginning. It's Christmas Eve, 1945. The Sauter family celebrated Christmas Eve. Marion, the eldest daughter, had been working in town and surprised 3 of her younger sisters, Martha, Jenny Jr., and Betty, with new toys as presents.
Aww.
Excited, the children asked to stay up past their usual bedtime, which was granted by their mother, Jenny, with the condition that their son, Maurice, and Louis would put the cows in and feed the chickens before going to bed.
Love that.
Classic.
Listen here, kids. You can stay up, but you gotta feed the cows and the chickens before you go off to bed, all right? You hear?
Yes, Mom. George and the 2 eldest boys, John and George Jr., were already asleep at this time, which was around 10 p.m. After reminding the kids to do their chores, Jenny and little Sylvia went to bed. Now we know what happens next. Jenny is awoken by the phone, supposedly a wrong number. The police were actually able to find this person who made the phone call later during the investigation, and it did turn out to be a wrong number.
Oh, wow.
Because the phone call really freaked Jenny out.
Yes.
Because she could hear, like, laughing in the background of the call.
Ew. But what, it was just, like, a party or something?
Yeah, the person was just at a party. It was actually genuinely a wrong number.
Wow.
But a lot of people thought it was connected to the fire.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. So then Jenny hears that weird sound on the roof and later wakes up to the smell of smoke.
Okay, if you hear a weird loud sound on your roof, don't go back to sleep.
She didn't hear anything else. She just heard a thud and then a rolling noise and then...
I know, but like...
Yeah.
Would you investigate your roof if you heard that?
Yeah, like George, go see... Wake up George, man.
Yeah, or Jenny.
Or...
She's a strong, independent woman.
Yeah, but I would wake up the man. I'd be like, you go check it out. I don't want to.
Yeah, you know? I would probably be the one. Out of me in Bristol, it would be me.
Yeah.
I would go check it out.
Because of the fire that had started, they had no access to a phone, so Marion ran to a neighbor's house to call the fire department. Additionally, a driver going down the road noticed the flames and had also attempted to call the fire department from a tavern in town. However, neither of them could reach the operator.
What?
At some point...
What do you mean?
I don't know. They just couldn't reach the operator.
Okay. The operator was, no was on break?
I guess.
What the fuck? Yeah. Okay.
At some point, someone was able to call the fire department from another phone in town. And it's important to note that because it was Christmas Eve, it took some time for the fire department to come together.
Dude, like, a house can burn down in a solid 10 minutes flat.
It took them hours to reach the house. And they were like maybe a 10 minute drive away.
What?
That is
an actual disgrace upon the fire hall there.
So it was later said by Fire Chief Morris that he was unable to drive the fire truck and had to wait for someone who wasn't probably inebriated to drive. It's Christmas Eve. He's like, I can't drive.
Okay. But let's remember that when you're on call as a firefighter,
yeah,
you are not supposed to be drinking.
Yeah.
We know this is a real fact.
Yeah.
Though I guess it is the 1945s of it all.
Yeah, right.
Like, what the hell?
So, George John and George Jr. were going to use an adder. Fuck me.
A ladder.
To climb to the attic. But it wasn't in its usual spot.
Right.
And it was nowhere to be seen.
Oh, what the
heck? It wasn't around the house.
What the heck?
So, George attempted to climb the house. This is really sad. To break open a window to help his other children stuck inside. But he slashed his arm open. And he had to climb back down the house.
No.
A water barrel stationed outside was frozen solid, which George initially wanted to try to use to throw onto the fire.
Yeah, he's trying everything. It's a really sad story, actually.
So he had the idea to pull one of his coal trucks up to the house and use it to climb into the house. But neither of them would start, even though they had used them the previous day.
Well.
Like the engine was flooded. Like, they couldn't start the car at all.
But, okay, devil's advocate a sec. Mm-hmm. Was it a diesel or was it a gas vehicle? Because I know that when it's really cold, diesels often have to be, like, plugged in.
Right.
And they often won't start. Like, they're pretty temperamental in the winter.
Yeah.
Unless they've been running often.
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems a little fishy, though. It is suspicious.
It is fishy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the six members of the Sauter family who were able to escape the house had no choice but to watch their home burn down within 45 minutes. And it took the fire department, I think, about 7 hours to get there.
Hours?
Like, they didn't get there until the next morning.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, they were like, we'll just let it burn. Did they know there were children in there?
Yep.
That's so messed up.
I know. In the morning, the firefighters couldn't do much but search through the ashes for human remains. But weirdly, they couldn't find anything.
Right.
Oh my Apparently, God. They did find some small bone fragments, likely from some mice or like something in the basement. Like critters.
Okay.
In the you know.
Maybe like a cat.
Maybe.
Like Mr. Wiggles.
Maybe. However, Chief Morris believed the five Sauter children had perished in the fire, suggesting it was hot enough to cremate them.
Nope, wrong.
Although we know now through science, and they even knew this back then too, so he was just an idiot. It's not true.
No.
It takes temperatures of 1400 to 2000 Fahrenheit to cremate a body in its entirety. And even still then, there's like sometimes little bone fragments.
Yeah.
And it takes hours to cremate a body.
And how... A house, I feel like a house wouldn't get that hot.
No, they don't.
Because it's not like in an enclosed space.
They don't get that hot.
No.
There's no way.
Well, maybe a newer house nowadays filled all with plastic. I know that, shout out Dad, he has told us that a lot. Like, houses burn a lot hotter now than they used to, but I don't think they get that hot.
They don't burn that hot for long enough. To cremate a body.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So Fire Chief Morris told George to leave the site untouched in order for the state fire marshals to conduct a more thorough investigation. But 4 days later, George and Jenny couldn't handle it anymore. And they bulldozed dirt over the basement to convert it into a memorial garden for their children. The coroner held an inquest shortly after and stated that the fire was caused by faulty wiring.
Okay. Wait, so George and Jenny were waiting for them to, like, actually do a better search investigation kind of thing?
Kind of. The fire, like, I don't know. The state fire marshal was just gonna come search through the frickin' ashes again.
Interesting. But then they were like, no, let's just cover it up. Well, that's a little, like,
yeah.
Would you do that? I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, grief is a mysterious thing. It does a lot of weird things to the brain.
Yeah.
So I feel like I understand.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, yeah, I don't know if that was maybe the best idea. Yeah,
I don't know.
Hmm.
So, coroner says faulty wiring.
Right.
But they just had the house rewired.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah.
It's not.
Sure, accidents happen, but it seems odd that the house's wiring was professionally redone.
Mm-hmm.
And deemed perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Even more confusing, the life insurance salesman who had threatened George's house and children.
Okay, yeah, wait.
Was on the jury for the inquest.
What?
Yes.
Okay. Well, so then of course he would say that it's faulty wiring.
Yeah.
Because he did it. Because
he threatened George and his kids.
Or he got someone else to do it.
So, yeah. Life insurance salesman, your house is going to go up in flames, your children are going to be hurt.
Wow.
And then he's on the jury for the inquest.
That's not okay.
No.
No.
So, on December 30th, 1945, death certificates were issued and a funeral was held on January 2nd, 1946.
No.
It said that Jenny didn't actually go. She couldn't go to the funeral.
Honestly, fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Like, I would never judge someone for how they need to grieve.
Yeah.
In that kind of way.
Well, because they have nothing to bury.
Yeah.
Like, empty caskets? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, so sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
As the Sauter family began to rebuild their lives, they started to question the official findings of the inquest about the fire.
Yep, fair.
It concerned them that the cause was deemed an electrical or wiring issue,
mm-hmm.
since the house's lights remained on while the house went up in flames. If it was an electrical problem, the lights would have gone out.
Really? Like, yes. For realsies?
Yes.
Okay. So, obviously, they're just being gaslit.
Yeah, right?
Like, hella gaslit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even more chilling is that they eventually found the ladder that was meant to be on the outside of the house.
Oh, no.
Where was it? At the bottom of an embankment.
What?
75 feet away from the home, but no one in the family had moved it.
It was just thrown into
an embankment.
They were definitely set up.
Mm-hmm.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. A telephone repairman, who I assumed was sent to the home to look at the phone lines from the road to the house, told the Sauters that the house's line had not been burned through during the fire, because remember, Jenny couldn't use the phone, but it was cut by someone who climbed the 14-foot pole.
Oh, and with the ladder.
And was able to reach 2 feet away from the pole to do it. Perhaps using their ladder.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I was wondering, when you said the part about how, like, she couldn't use the phone because of the fire, I was like, I don't think that's true. That makes
the street.
More sense.
Not even, like, the line going into their home, but, like, up a fucking phone pole.
That's so crazy. Okay. Yeah, because, of course, if the lights are still on.
Yeah.
Of course, the phone would still work.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. A man who neighbor saw stealing a block and tackle, which is a pulley system, from the Sauter property around the time of the fire, was arrested.
Good.
He admitted to the theft and claimed he was the person who cut the phone line.
Oh.
Thinking it was a power line.
Oh. Okay.
Also, though, if it was a power line, it would have killed you.
Yeah.
Idiot.
What an idiot, literally.
But he denied having to do anything with the fire.
Okay, but why did he cut the phone line then?
Well, weirdly, there's no record of identifying this man.
What?
And why he had cut a utility line while stealing the block and tackle has never been explained.
Okay, well then where did this record that you're saying come from?
It's in like all of the articles.
But then it's not an official thing?
That he was identified. But there was a block and tackle pulley system stolen from the solder's truck.
Okay.
So that it did happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So strange.
Yeah. Jenny herself stated in 1968 that if this man had cut the power, she, George, and the other four children wouldn't have been able to escape the home. They wouldn't be able to see.
Oh.
Jenny was also vocal about not accepting Chief Morris's belief that her remaining children's bodies had been completely burned in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the household appliances were still found after the house had burned down. And Jenny even explained that a newspaper account of a similar house fire that killed a family of seven, that had happened recently. But the skeletal remains of the victims were found in their home.
Yep, she's right.
Again,
if there's appliances found, there'll be bodies.
Yeah, it takes hours at such a high temperature for bones to be cremated. Jenny even contacted a local crematorium to explain the process of cremation to her, for further solidifying the fact that it's not possible for human remains to burn to ash in a house fire.
Wow.
It just can't happen.
So where are the Sodder children?
Exactly. In the spring months, the Sodders planted a memorial garden over where the basement used to be, and Jenny tended this garden for the rest of her life. But things were still not adding up, and more evidence kept piling up that pointed to arson. A bus driver passing through Fayetteville late on Christmas Eve said he saw people throwing balls of fire.
Okay. Yep. Ding, 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 ding.
At the Sodder house. A few months later, after the fire, Sylvia found a small dark green rubber object in the bush nearby where the house once stood. Recalling the loud thump heard by Jenny the night of the fire, George said the object looked like some kind of incendiary device used in combat.
Wow. Okay.
This led the family to believe that the fire had started on the roof, but there was no way to prove this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have come forward claiming they've seen the missing Sodder children. Maurice,
right.
Martha, Louie, Jenny Jr., and Benny. One woman who was watching the fire from the road said she saw some of the children peering out of a passing car.
What?
Another woman at a rest stop located between Fayetteville and Charleston said she served them breakfast on Christmas morning.
Right. Oh
my and gosh. Saw a car with Florida plates in the parking lot.
Okay, so they were kidnapped.
Yes. That's what I think.
I think so too, but they've never been found.
Never.
Oh, that's so sad.
George and Jenny Sodder hired a private investigator, C.C. Tinsley, to look into the case. There were rumors around town that Fire Chief Morris had found a heart at the scene of the crime and put it into a metal box and buried it.
Why?
Yeah, no. What? Tinsley looked into this, and Morris, once confronted, agreed to show George and Tinsley the box. It was taken to a local funeral director who told them it was a beef liver. Cow liver what? In a box that Chief Morris buried.
Why?
On the Sodder property.
Why, though? He's the chief of police chief?
Yeah.
He's the police chief.
Yes.
What is up with him? He's so suspicious.
More rumors circulated that Morris admitted he'd placed it there for George and Jenny to find, to be satisfied with the story that their missing children had died in the fire.
Okay.
How fucked up is that, bro?
First of all, that doesn't even satisfy that they would die in... How does finding a heart,
quote unquote,
that you assume is your child's in a metal box in the ground...
I know.
If you find that, you're going to be like, oh yeah, they died in the fire. What?
I know. What? I know.
That's like the worst logic I've ever heard in my life.
I know. Okay. So messed up.
Okay, fine. Holy, I'm mad.
I know. George continued to investigate his missing kids for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
At one point, he saw a photo in a magazine of a group of ballet dancers in New York and was convinced one of them looked like Betty. He drove to the ballet studio and demanded to see this girl, but he was refused. He even tried to get the FBI investigating what he and Jenny believed to be the kidnapping of their five children. Wow.
The FBI's director at the time, J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no,
even responded to George's letters, writing, quote, "Although I would like to be of service, the matter related appears to be of local character and does not come within the investigative jurisdiction of this bureau," end quote.
Wow. He's a baddie guy, right? We don't like him.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
I remember J. Edgar Hoover. He's famous for bad things.
Yeah. He added that he would be able to assist if the local authorities requested help from the FBI, which is, that's how it works. But the Fayetteville Police and Fire Department declined to ask for help.
Holy, so. Because it's corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
It's so corrupt.
Mm-hmm. In August of 1949, George persuaded a pathologist from Washington, D.C., Oscar Hunter, to overlook a new search through the dirt where the house stood.
What's a pathologist?
Are you kidding me,
Ray? No.
It's like you don't even listen to Paul Holes.
I do, but I don't remember what they do.
Science, DNA.
Oh, okay.
Science, duh.
That's the job I wanted when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. Oh,
fuck. Still kind of would fuck with that.
Yeah, right? Also, I either left this part out or forgot to say it.
Okay.
But the private investigator that George and Jenny hired went missing.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, why do they have it out for these two so bad? Maybe I say that
later.
Okay.
Maybe it'll come back.
Maybe.
Okay, so they're doing a new search through the dirt where the house stood. They found a dictionary and some coins. And they're saying that these kids burned in this house.
Holy.
And there's a fucking dictionary in the dirt. Are you kidding me?
It's very obvious that they didn't.
Some small bone fragments were unearthed, and they were determined to be human vertebrae. So these were sent to a specialist at the Smithsonian Institute and were confirmed to be part of the lumbar spine, all from the same person.
Wait.
And determined to be around 17 years old, which wouldn't point to any of the children who were trapped in the house during the blaze.
Okay, that's just an added layer of like what is going on here. What, there was a dead body in the house?
Oh, I'm getting there. The oldest of the missing children, who was Maurice, would have been 14 at the time of the fire. The specialist also noted that the bone didn't show any signs of having been exposed to fire and said it was strange that these were the only bones found, since full skeletons should have been left in the ashes.
It was planted evidence.
They concluded that the bones likely came from the dirt George used to fill in the basement.
Oh,
so just like a body from
what?
The dirt he got.
Okay. Oh, what the hell?
I know.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. There's just a body in the dirt. Okay.
Investigator Tinsley. Cesar Tinsley.
Is
said to have confirmed that the bone fragments came from a cemetery, but couldn't explain why they had been there or how long.
Water?
Or how they could have gotten into the dirt that was used to fill in the basement.
Maybe some rushing water?
Maybe. In 1950, the West Virginia legislature held two hearings regarding the case as it gained national attention. Then Governor
Robert Pattinson. Edward.
Then Governor Pattinson and State Police Superintendent Bouquet told the Sodders that the case was hopeless and closed it on a state level.
That's so rude.
They're like, fuck you.
They're being so rude right now.
At this time, the FBI claimed it had jurisdiction over the case as a possible interstate kidnapping, but dropped it 2 years later, 1952, after following leads with no progress.
Okay.
So essentially, on paper, it's ended. But this isn't the end of the missing Sodder children. As I mentioned before, George and Jenny didn't give up hope that five of their children, Maurice, Martha, Louis, Jenny Jr., and Betty, were alive and were kidnapped that night in 1942. They made flyers of the children
offering a $5,000 reward for information.
Whoa, that's like $20,000 in today's money.
Probably. In 1952, the Sodders erected a billboard at the site of their home and one along Route 66. This billboard is well known to the true crime community and has become somewhat of a famous landmark for drivers through Fayetteville.
It's not even Lark, it's Hark the Herald.
That's embarrassing for you.
Thank you.
A few months later, another... Oh, yeah.
We're maxing out on our amount of record time right now.
A few months later, another reported sighting of the children came to light from a woman who ran a hotel in Charleston. She claimed to have seen the missing kids a week after the fire, although she couldn't remember the date. Okay.
I saw this really important thing, but I can't remember the date.
She said the children came into the hotel around 12 a.m. with two men and two women.
Oh.
When she tried to speak with one of the kids, quote, "One of the men looked at me in a hostile manner. He turned around and began talking rapidly in Italian. Immediately, the whole party stopped talking to me," end quote.
What?
And this woman said they left the hotel early the next morning.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then.
Investigators don't consider this story credible since... Oh. She first saw the photos of the children 2 years after the fire, which was 5 years before she came forward with her information.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, stories
people have
abound.
Their reasons, but I don't know.
George continued to follow many leads and traveled to each place they came from. Someone from St. Louis, Missouri, claimed that Martha was being held in a convent. Someone at a bar in Texas said they overheard two people making incriminating statements about a fire that happened on Christmas Eve in West Virginia years ago.
Mm-hmm.
1967,
like two true crime junkies.
Yeah, I know, right?
God.
In 1967, George went to Houston to follow another tip. A woman had written a letter to them saying that Louis revealed his identity to her one night after having too much to drink. She thought Louis and Maurice were living in Texas somewhere. George was unable to speak with this woman, but the police were able to help find the men she indicated as Louis and Maurice.
Oh, gosh.
And they denied being the missing sons.
What? Okay.
The Sodders received another letter that they believed was the most credible evidence that their son Louis was still alive. A letter postmarked in Central City, Kentucky, was mailed to Jenny with no return address. Inside the envelope was a photo of a young man around 30 years old with features that Louis likely would have had as an adult.
What the heck?
On the back of the photo, there was writing that said, "Louis Sodder, I love brother Frankie, Lil Boys or Ill Boys, like Illinois, I'm not really sure. A90132 or 35.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that gave me actual chills.
I know.
Like,
that was written on the back of the photo.
I imagined her opening this and seeing this photo. Like,
yeah.
Why? What? Why?
Yeah. Just only Louis.
To be like, either someone sent it in like an evil way.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone sent it in a way to be like, hey, just so you know, your son's still alive.
Yeah.
I don't know what's worse, man. I don't know.
I know. After receiving this photo, the Sodders hired another PI to go to Central City and try to find who sent the letter.
Yeah.
And this is the one who went missing.
Oh.
He never reported back to them.
What?
And they couldn't find him. He disappeared into the night.
Okay. You had one job.
Well, what if someone killed him for trying to find Louis?
Really? You think so?
Maybe.
Fuck.
This picture gave them a ray of hope, and they added it to the billboard of their missing children. A relative of Jenny's in Florida, said to be her brother Frankie, even had to prove his kids were his after George heard that this relative's children looked so similar to his own missing kids.
Oh, I see.
It's also said that one of Jenny's nephews were named Frank. I think this pushed George to believe that Jenny's family may have taken their children.
Wow.
Because what? The back of the photo said, Louis Sauter, yeah. I love brother Frankie.
Yeah. Why would they do that, though? Like, what would be...
I don't know.
Why would they steal... Yeah.
I don't know. I think they were just in such... George was in such a state of grief. He was like, though you took my kids to Jenny's brother. And he was like, no. And George was like, okay, they look so much like mine. But it's like, that's because you're related.
Yeah. Oh, you know. That's really sad.
Mm-hmm. At this point, George admitted that the lack of information coming in about their children was, quote, like hitting a rock wall. We can't go any further, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Although he vowed to continue their search, saying in another interview, quote, we only want to know if they did die in the fire. We want to be convinced. Otherwise, we want to know what happened to them.
Yeah.
End quote.
Honestly.
George died in 1969, but Jenny and their remaining children continue to look for answers to the questions about the missing kids.
Wow. Did any of them, like, go to the places? Like, did any of them go to Kentucky or the other places where they were supposedly seen? Like, if this was
just
me
George,
and you, I would go.
Yeah, I would too.
I would search.
Yeah, I know.
Like, hella search. I would be like, everything is dropped. I'm taking out a loan and I'm, this is my life now.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm not shaming at all. I'm just interested if they did or not.
All of this to say, except for John, who never spoke of the night of the fire and said his family should accept what happened and moved on.
Wait, who's John?
One of the older sons.
Wait, what did he say?
He never spoke of the fire. He said that his family should accept that his siblings burned in the house.
I guess it's just easier to accept that so that you can try and move on. Like, I understand that, but woof.
Yeah. It's most curious to me that John is most outspoken for the story that his siblings perished in the fire, because he had two different accounts for the night when he was first questioned about the fire.
Oh.
But it could have just been...
false memory.
Yeah. He first stated he had run into his siblings' bedroom and tried to wake them, but couldn't, and then just ran out of the house.
Okay.
But he later changed his story, saying that when he went into their room to help... they weren't there. Their beds were empty.
Okay.
And then he ran outside.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I wonder why he would say that he couldn't wake them up.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a thought. Maybe he was covering for them. Maybe they snuck out and they were like, cover for us, older brother.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's why he said that. And then he realized, like, no, this is actually real. But then he would have said, I don't know.
Yeah, but they were all, like, such varying ages.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Another article I read said that he simply yelled for his siblings before running out of the house, not even going into their bedroom.
Okay.
So if he didn't go into their room, no one had seen them that night.
Wow.
After they went to bed.
That's so crazy.
Because Jenny and George went to bed before the kids.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I don't, like, thinking about going to bed before your children go to bed is so scary.
I know.
Like, for some reason.
I know.
I'm not to be that parent, but to kind of be that parent.
Yeah, I know.
Like, sometimes I think about all the times that I forgot to text mom back when I was staying out late.
Yeah.
And she would stay up waiting.
I know.
Sorry, mom. I'm really sorry.
Sorry, mom.
I didn't mean to make you
so scared.
Frightened. I get it now.
Yeah.
I really do.
For the rest of Jenny's life, she wore black and tended the garden she made at the site of their former home.
Oh, baby.
She passed away in 1989, and her family took down the weathered billboard when she died.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They took it down. Okay. Yeah. Plot twist, I guess.
The surviving children and their children continue to keep this case in the news and continue to look for leads.
Cool. So they're like, yeah, everyone talk about it, share it. Mm-hmm. Like,
their main theory is that the Sicilian mafia attempted to extort George for money and that the children were taken by someone who knew of the planned arson and told them they would be safe if they left. It's thought that they may have been taken to Italy from these unknown people. And the family believes that if the missing kids survived, they wouldn't have attempted contact with the surviving family members in order for them to remain safe from the mafia. Sylvia Sauter, the youngest of the surviving kids, died in 2021.
Oh.
Yeah.
They're all dead? All the rest of the siblings?
The kids, yeah.
Wow.
She said that the fire was her earliest memory. She was like 3.
Whoa.
Recalling that she was the last child to evacuate the home. She believed throughout her life her siblings survived that night, and Sylvia's daughter spoke out in 2006 saying, quote, "She promised my grandparents she wouldn't let the story die, that she would do anything she could," end quote.
Wow.
The 5 Sauter children who didn't escape the house that night have been missing for 79 years.
Oh, that just gave me crazy chills.
Yet their stories continue. Their story continues to be told in books, on the news, online, and even on TV, as seen on History's Greatest Mysteries on the History Channel in 2022.
Wow.
And that is the Sauter children.
So what do you think?
I think they were kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that photo is Louis.
So the part where they talked about how they were kidnapped for, like, money, for extortion.
Yeah.
But then they never contacted the family for the money.
Yeah, I don't know.
Really, really weird to me.
Or they were kidnapped because they hated George.
Right, yeah.
And they were like, fuck you.
Yeah.
For all the shit things you say about Italy.
Right, and it was probably like, if the kids ever reached out, they would be killed or whatever. Or
brainwashed, worse. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that they were also kidnapped. They did not die in that fire.
No.
There's no way.
No. So they, and I don't think they ran away. There's no way.
No. No. Because then they would have reached back out.
Yeah.
Like.
I think they were kidnapped. I don't know if they were killed or not, though. So, because, I don't know.
True.
I mean, like, with DNA now, with genealogy shit, like.
True.
I feel like.
There's descendants.
Yeah.
Of those missing.
Either that, and they just don't have their DNA profile within the system,
mm-hmm.
or they were killed.
Right.
Those are really, like, the only 2 things for me personally.
Yeah. No, it's so crazy. I always love, like, doing the DNA, like, ancestries type stuff, except, like, I haven't, and I don't know if I would until I know that there's, like, an actual trusted source, because even recently, I think on Ancestry...
Uh-huh.
There was, like, a data breach.
Yeah.
And now everyone's data is, like, being sold on the black market. Yeah. And it's really fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a way to, like, I don't know, find all a certain type of people and then try to kill them.
Yeah.
Because of, like, racism.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. But wouldn't it be cool if we, like, lived in a world where everyone's data could be connected and you could easily see, like,
mm-hmm.
lineages and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a crazy case.
I know.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It makes me so sad, like, talking about that case, because
mm-hmm.
it's just so fucked up. And, like, the way that Jenny and George were gaslighted for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
No one believed them except their kids. Because they were there.
That's the part I don't understand. It just means that, like, everyone was involved.
Yeah.
Which is so scary when, like, you can't trust anyone because everyone is against you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just so messed up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening. I'm glad that we didn't do the same story. I was actually worried when you were like, my story's so cool. I was like, oh, fuck. Is she going to do the Sauter children too?
No. I'm trying to do more local stories because I know we've been requested to do more local stuff. So I'm trying to stick a bit more local, yes. But it's hard.
I
find it really challenging, actually.
I do too. Although the books that I got help a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them are just short and I'm like, okay, how do I make a story out of that?
Yeah, no, exactly. I know.
Maybe I can just do... Well, the story I'm working on for next time... It's like another mash of tales.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you, everyone.
You want to outro us?
Oh, yeah. If you have your own spooky, ghost, or regular stories that you want to share with us, you can email us at ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com, or you can, as Jamie says, slide into our DMs at ghoulsocietypod. And you can find any of our resources and trigger warnings in the show notes.
Thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. She claimed to... I actually...
You want me to read it for you?
I actually...
Imagine we weren't recording this whole time.
Oh my god. Yeah. I actually can't. Okay.